Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Dom Giordano on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Let's bring Dan Abrams in here on Talk Radio 1210. Dan, welcome back to Philadelphia. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure to be back with you, Dom.
Well, Dan, over the years, you are one of the premier guys, and I know it's tough on TV to kind of nuance but get to the heart of something. And you've started this new series. I read the Abraham Lincoln book. Love that. Lincoln's Last Trial. And now the Theodore Roosevelt for the defense, the courtroom battle to save his legacy. Is this a cottage industry now? Is this the genre? Is this what you are going to be rolling out?
Well, yeah. So this will be the second in what will be four books. And basically the theme within each book is finding a transcript from a trial that has kind of been forgotten to history.
Mm-hmm.
And the Roosevelt one is kind of amazing in the fact that Theodore Roosevelt, at the time the ex-president of the United States, testifies in his own defense for 8 days on the witness stand. And when you think about that, not only was he an ex-president, but he was one of the most controversial and beloved people in the country. And so the idea that at the time it was front page news everywhere for weeks, the Theodore Roosevelt trial, et cetera, and now it's weirdly been kind of relegated to a footnote. So we took the transcript and we told the story surrounding this amazing trial for the new book.
Well, let's talk about, too, the issue there, and it really has modern-day implication, Dan, and that is the libel laws of that time. What were the libel laws of that time versus where we are now?
They were very different. It is much harder to sue someone today successfully, particularly a public figure, than it would have been back then. And so you did see more libel suits. So in effect, the moment the judge ruled that the statement that Roosevelt made about this Republican Party boss, he called him corrupt. And the minute he determined that that was a libelous statement, the burden then shifted to Theodore Roosevelt to be able to prove it was true. Today, the plaintiff would have a lot more to prove before any burdens would shift. The plaintiff now, in a case like this, would have to show not only that it was false, but that the person who said it knew or should have known, in effect, that it was false. And that's where it gets very hard to sue these days, and was much easier to sue back then.
Well, I kind of like today's standard. I'll ask you if you do. And I remember I didn't graduate law school. I only practiced on the air, not like you, a full graduate. Kiddingly.
I play one on TV. Too.
Yeah, exactly. I play it on radio. Yeah. And I remember winning moot court Sullivan versus the United States was the causal element. Maybe President Trump intrigues me on this, though, because it does seem like if you're a major public figure and given social media, the stuff that people can say and get going today doesn't seem like we have any vehicle to address that while still maintaining the idea we don't want all these lawsuits filed all the time.
Look, New York Times versus Sullivan was an important and critical foundational Supreme Court decision that I completely support. And that's the one you're talking about,
yes,
which is basically set the standard that said that if you are going to sue a public figure, you're going to have to show that it wasn't just false, but that the person basically should have known what they were saying was false. And the reason we have that is because, you know, we have to allow for mistakes, right? We can't put, you know, a media entity out of business because of a mistake. And the point here is it has to be more than just a mistake. It has to be something where they easily could have or should have been able to figure out that the information was wrong.
Well, let me intervene with a case in point. Now, I don't know. It has to be in court, so I'm fair with that. But the Covington Catholic case, And the figures, we all know, they're outrageous. They're not going to get that. It seems as if the Washington Post and others, Dan, at least preliminarily, rushed to this without a lot of journalistic ability to check it out.
Yeah, but rushed is not the same.
Right.
We're not talking about making judgments about whether a media entity did a good job or didn't do a good job. That's not the question. Look, the First Amendment provides additional protections to be able to speak. We want to encourage speech. And part of speech is going to be, on occasion, getting things wrong. But not making judgments, particularly not the government making judgments, about what journalism we like and what journalism we don't like. With that said, media entities have lost big libel lawsuits.
Yes.
Why? Because there was evidence that they should have known that what they were doing was, the other standard is called reckless disregard for the
yes.
truth. And if there is reckless disregard for the truth, a media entity can lose a big libel lawsuit. And it's happened. And there are other standards. You can sue based on violation of privacy, depending on mm-hmm. what the type of lawsuit is, et cetera. But the point being that it's a good thing that media entities have a layer of protection here. It is not an absolute protection. It does not mean that media entities can't get sued. It doesn't mean that media entities shouldn't get sued. It just means that when looking at it from a kind of 10,000-foot point of view, we don't want to simply say, you said something about me that's wrong, and therefore we're going to entitle someone to many millions of dollars of damages. Look, you got to give them – look, I'll give you an example in the law, in the copyright law, right? The bottom line is if you violate someone's copyright, let's say you accidentally take a picture off the Internet that you shouldn't have, that belonged to somebody else.
Yes.
And they ask you to take it down. Taking it down isn't enough. They're still going to say, you know what, beyond just the damages that you and, beyond the value you got to it, I can sue you for $150,000 per violation. That is a really, really strict standard. And it's not the kind of standard that we want to apply, I don't think, when it comes to journalism and encouraging people to do hard-nosed journalism.
Absolutely. Let me ask you, Dan Abrams, with us, his brand-new book, part of his series, Theodore Roosevelt for the Defense, A Courtroom Battle to Save His Legacy. I love it. We have Alan Dershowitz on, not as frequently lately when you've been on with him, going back and forth, Mueller-related things. I'm a fan of what Barr is doing now as far as trying to go back, get to the bottom of the FISA process as much as we can know publicly, and how all this got triggered. And a lot of people tell me, once something's over, we drop the ball, we don't go back, and we don't reassess for reform. Are you okay with that, or is this a witch hunt, in your view?
Look, I'm okay with the Inspector General of the FBI going back to figure out more mm-hmm. about what happened. I don't think that there's any indication at this point, and this is what Chris Wray said, which was the director of the FBI that got President Trump so upset, is there's no evidence of wrongdoing at this point.
Well, wait a minute. The text messages we have with Strzok and...
They were fired. I mean,
yeah.
My point, that was a separate Inspector General investigation. That investigation he's already done on the Hillary Clinton investigation. What did he find? He found that those texts were inappropriate. He found that they were correct in firing them. He also found that they didn't act in any way towards helping Hillary Clinton. And in fact, if they wanted to help Hillary Clinton, they simply would have leaked that there was a Russia investigation ongoing.
They could have done that, but you're not troubled by this stuff with McCabe and insurance policies. You chalk that up to just idle talk?
You can't lump it all together. You got to go case by case. Am I troubled by McCabe? No. Am I troubled by Strzok and Page's text? Yes.
Okay.
Do I think that Strzok and Page should have been fired? Yes. Do I think there's any evidence that Strzok and Page took any actions to hurt the president? No. Do I think that it's okay that they're looking into a little bit more of the FISA stuff? Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, the FISA thing, too. It would be troubling to anybody in the legal field.
It shouldn't be. There's nothing that we know right now that should be troubling to you about the FISA process.
Well, 98% approval rate, Dan, that's alleged anyhow, right?
Oh, that's fine. If you want to talk about broadly, here's my concern. My concern is that people who used to be tough law and order people have now become criminal defense lawyers. if you want to be a criminal defense lawyer, you want to say that the FISA process is unfair to particular targets and we need to change the FISA process, that's fine. Let's talk about a broad discussion of FISA. That's very different from saying that there was something that was done here which was improper based on what the laws were at the time. Well, and what the laws are. And my concern is the hypocrites who are claiming to be tough on big law and order people who supported the ability to engage in surveillance, who are now saying, oh, my goodness.
Well, who might they be? Who are you calling out there?
I'm talking about people who call into my radio show all the time, right?
Yeah.
All the time, who claim to be. And look, and by the way, you're seeing it with a lot of conservatives across the board, which is disappointing to me because I consider myself a law and order person. I consider myself pro-law enforcement, and I long have. And my concern is that you have people who are now switching sides because they don't like the results of what has happened. And you can't do it that way. And so my point is that when it comes to the FISA process, yeah, sure, I have no problem in particular with the Inspector General. That, you know, remember, when you talk about McCabe, you know, the only thing that McCabe was found to have engaged in quote-unquote wrongdoing was in whether he told the truth or not about a leak to the Wall Street Journal where he was trying to show how seriously they were taking the Hillary Clinton investigation. Now, he and Comey had different stories, and the
that's
Inspector
right.
General
yep.
believed Comey and not McCabe. Okay, fair enough. But that's not some grand conspiracy to bring down the president, as they're claiming.
So you're not troubled by the undercurrent here, though, given the circumstances that they just think Trump is inappropriate for the office, and that's the subtext of a lot of this, Dan, that has people upset.
A lot of what? I mean, the FISA warrant was on Carter Page, who wasn't even working for the Trump campaign anymore. I mean, it's like people sort of like to lump all this stuff in together. But the FISA warrant was on Carter Page.
The point is, overall, I am a law and order, cops, family, and all that. But people used to be very scrupulous about the FBI under Hoover, and rightfully so when we found out all that was going on. That's the fear that ought to unite us with all this with the FBI, no matter who's in charge.
I understand that's the fear, but there is no evidence, zero, that the FBI did anything that was out to get Trump. In fact, you can make a very strong argument that on the whole, the big picture, the most important thing that the FBI did was Comey coming out 11 days before the election and announcing that Hillary Clinton was under investigation again. That's the guy who was trying to bring down Donald Trump?
All right, well, Dan, I enjoy having you again any chance we get. What can you tell us after Theodore Roosevelt? Do you have the other on the drawing board as far as the third and fourth book?
We haven't announced the third and fourth yet.
Okay.
But the Roosevelt book, I got to tell you, as you point out, does have some real resonating factors to today, which is ex-president of the United States. Remember, Roosevelt actually used the Department of Justice to prosecute media organizations he didn't like. So he had a love-hate relationship
to put it mildly. Hey, you got to love a guy who shot in the chest, but the speech was so thick, he's only wounded, and he continues the speech.
And I'm actually standing across the street from the museum where that glasses case and speech is sitting that protected him and saved his life from that bullet.
Unbelievable guy. Dan, thank you. Congratulations on the new series.
My pleasure.
Tom Giordano, weekdays 9 till noon on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.